You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
And we have a great guest in studio today with an important story to share, but I think also a story that often goes untold. And that's why we get to share here on The Coffee Hour. Thanks to our friends at Concordia University, Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. Check them out at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin, live uncommon. In studio with us today, Martin Schreiber. He's author of My Two Elaines. Martin, glad to have you in studio today.
Andy and Sarah, I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you.
Look forward to hearing your story, learning more about your book, but also your story, which makes up your book. Share with us a little bit about you and your wife, and I understand your experience with Alzheimer's.
The book I wrote, My Two Elaines, and the first Elaine is the young girl I met when I was 14 years of age at Milwaukee Lutheran High School in Latin class, and I knew right away that she was the woman that, or the person that I wanted to marry. And so we dated, we went steady, and we got engaged, and we got married, and 4 children, and 13 grandchildren, and now 6 great-grandchildren. My friend, my companion, my advisor, when I would run for political office, she would be the hardest worker. If I would lose, she would never let me feel defeated. So the second Elaine began to appear, maybe some 14 to 15 years ago. The same person, but this new Elaine is now beginning to forget recipes that she had been working and doing an outstanding job in cooking for all the years that we have been married. She would be getting lost between places that she had been going to back and forth for maybe 15 years. If she would back the car out of the garage, sometimes it would be scraped on the side, very unlike her. And so that was the beginning of the understanding and diagnosis of Alzheimer's. And so this journey now is in its 14th year, and she has now been at the Lutheran Home in Milwaukee, assisted living memory care, now for 3 years. And what I concluded is that if Alzheimer's is bad, ignorance of the disease is worse. And when I say ignorance of the disease, I don't mean how the brain works. I mean a lack of understanding of this disease by the medical profession and even people involved in church ministry and caregivers, not understanding that this disease takes away the memory of a person. And if you for a moment can envision a funnel and hold the small part of your funnel by your eye and look up. And of course, as the funnel expands, you can see the blueness of the sky and the hope of tomorrow. Now, turn that funnel over, and now the large part is by your eye, and you look out and you only see a small hole in front of you. That now becomes the life of the person who is ill. And they do not know or are aware of what may have happened 5 minutes ago, 5 years ago, or maybe even 50 years ago, and they do not understand or know what's going to happen or care what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes or 5 hours or 5 years from now. And so their world now is completely different. And what is so important for caregivers and for people to understand is that we have to join their world. For example, Elaine asked me once how her parents were. Well, I said, Elaine, I said, your parents are both dead. Well, the shock on her face, you could see that she was concerned. She had not maybe said goodbye to them properly. Maybe she didn't even go to the funeral. And so now I I understand when she asked me, I said, Elaine, your parents are both fine. I said, your mom likes working at church and your dad is doing good. And so, for example, that's therapeutic fibbing. Therapeutic fibbing to help join the person who is now ill. And also to understand you can't argue with this disease. If Elaine has 5 coats on and she says that she is cold, there is no way that ever understand that 5 coats is sufficient or we should even take some off. It's simple enough to join their world. And so what also happens then through this entire experience, They tell me that a caregiver has a 35% chance of dying before their loved one. Mm-hmm. A caregiver for an Alzheimer's patient has a better chance of becoming ill and having their savings impacted and their jobs affected. And so we need to have a better understanding. Alzheimer's is not a chicken casserole disease. If I break my hip or if I have heart surgery and I'm laid up at home, people will bring me chicken casserole. If my wife has Alzheimer's or if Alzheimer's enters the picture, because people don't understand this disease, they shy away. And that begins to develop some greater isolation by the on behalf of the caregiver. And then the caregiver begins to get well, because the disease is regressive, no matter how much care and love and attention you give the person who is ill, things never get better. And that wears so heavily on the person who is the caregiver. So a caregiver has to have help. A caregiver has to learn how to cope and survive.
So you've mentioned this a little bit. You've touched on this a little bit that as a couple, when you're married and your spouse, and most likely the wife, has this disease, it's a journey that both partners have to take together, and that can be very. It's a very different experience for both, and that can be very challenging. Why is this care of the caregiver so important and so integral to the health of both of the individuals?
Well, the fact of the matter is, if the caregiver doesn't take care of himself or herself, the caregiver's going to die early. Mm-hmm. But not only that, a caregiver goes through grieving and also depression and also anxiety and also worry. I mean, you picture this relationship in which there's love and affection, and all of a sudden, one night my wife asked me, she said, you know, do you think my parents would mind if you and I go to bed together? And then a little bit later, you know, she would ask me, she says, will you love me? And I said, yeah. I says, I'll love you. Well, she says, how long will you love me? And I said, well, I wanted to make her at ease. So I said, Elaine, I will love you forever and ever and a billion years. And then she looks sad. I says, why are you sad? She says, I don't think I could take you that long. And so it's so important for the caregiver to understand, you know, when you get into an airplane, what is the first thing? Put on your oxygen mask first. And so a caregiver, if a caregiver does not take care of themselves, they could very well die before their loved one. And how cruel is it that the person who is ill has maybe this singular person who gives them peace and comfort, and this singular person, the caregiver, doesn't take care of themselves, and now they become ill. And so, as I said, if Alzheimer's is bad, ignorance of the disease is worse. But then I go one step further and say, rather than worrying about the storm to pass, to try and learn how to dance in the rain. And so, for example, I talked about therapeutic fibbing, you know, to try and make the life easier. If Elaine and I are going for a walk or doing something, I have to decide I'm going to steal moments of joy from this disease. So if she wants to look at a butterfly, I got to take time to look at the butterfly with her or look at the flower with her. And so As this disease progresses, it's so difficult for the caregiver to let go of the person who once was, to understand that there no longer can be that kind of a communication, that kind of experience with a loved one, because they're different, their brain is broken, and now we've got to join their world.
You mentioned that grieving occurs throughout this process. You know, when a loved one dies, a lot of that grieving usually happens right around the time of their death. But you mentioned some grieving happening throughout this disease. What's important? What support do you need as you serve as a caregiver and as you experience grief through this disease?
Well, I think one of the most important things you can do for a caregiver is to acknowledge what they are doing. Caregivers many times feel guilt, and the reason they feel guilt is no matter how hard they work or no matter what they do, their loved one still becomes worse. And mm-hmm. and so to make sure that we acknowledge what a caregiver does, but then by the same token, to look for ways, and again, sort of repeating myself, but to look for ways of stealing moments of joy so that you can travel this journey with your loved one rather than tugging apart at one another, trying to continue as a caregiver to reach back to the person who once was. And so we can, by the holding of hands, we can, by what I call listening with the eyes, if Elaine talks about whatever, but I can look and feel her eyes and her communication in that way, we can get these kinds of moments where we are still interacting with one another. She doesn't have to know my name. She can only understand me as a person who is friendly and kind. And so, but by the way, it is of the 10 top killers, it's number 6. It's the only one of those 10 top killers that cannot be cured, delayed, or prevented. But they tell me that they think that Elaine actually is getting better, because what happens is she and I have lunch in the cafeteria, and there was a doctor and a nurse sitting next to us, and Elaine began to continuously tell me how intelligent and good-looking I am. And so, well, what happened was the doctor and the nurse heard this, you know, and they says, well, Elaine's got to be getting better. And so they wrote an article for the New England Medical Journal, and lo and behold, the editor sent it back and says, look, we have to show 3 things that she's getting better. Intelligent and good-looking are only 2. Well, so a little bit of time goes by. Now we're sitting at the same table. Interestingly enough, the same doctor and the same nurse are sitting nearby. And now she said, how did we ever meet? And she asked me that many times. I said, well, Elaine, we met when we were freshmen in high school, and I knew right away that you were the person for me. But then also, if any boy got within 50 feet of you, I bopped him on the head. And she looked at me. And so now they have the 3 reasons how Elaine is getting better. And if you look to the New England Medical Journal around October or November, you'll probably see that article.
I want to hear so much more of your story. Do you have more time? Can you stick around and share the rest of your story with us?
Well, it's a compliment that you would say that. Sure, I would love to.
We're going to go to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're learning more about caring for the caregiver and author of My Two Elaines, Martin Schreiber. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth. Worldwide KFUO Radio salutes our day sponsors on this Tuesday, September 4th, 2018. Today's day sponsors are Andy and Lauren Bates. Today's day sponsors have made a contribution to Worldwide KFUO Radio in honor of their son, Oscar, as they celebrate his 5th birthday. Once again, we say thank you to Andy and Lauren Bates of Wildwood, Missouri, today's Worldwide KFUO day sponsors.
Due to the Labor Day holiday, there will be a repeat broadcast of Law and Gospel on Monday. On Tuesday with Mark Smith, we'll look at the hymn, Praise the Almighty. And then on Wednesday, we'll analyze the readings where Jesus tells people, don't tell others what I have done.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekday mornings beginning at 9:30 on KFUO.
Back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are talking with the author of My Two Elaines, Martin Schreiber, talking particularly about caring for the caregiver when a loved one has Alzheimer's or dementia. How do you care for them if you are yourself being drained and not caring for yourself, taking care of yourself, or others taking care of you? You talked to before we went to the break, Martin, you were talking a little bit about the spending time with your wife in the place where she receives care now. Tell us a little bit about the how important it is for her to have that full-time care and how that helps you be a caregiver as well. She's at Lutheran Home, is that right?
Yes, one of the most difficult decisions that I ever made in my whole life was making a decision as to whether to put my wife into a nursing home. And of course, I had promised in our marriage vows that I would always take care of her. And I was terribly troubled. I was going through counseling. And I told my counselor, I cannot see putting Elaine into a nursing home. And the counselor says, you are not putting Elaine anyplace. You are giving her an opportunity to be who she is now. And so all of these questions about how caregiving is best to be handled all boils down to the importance of understanding the need to join their world. And so there is no way that Marty Shriver's 24/7 nursing home care could take care of Elaine. We would go for a walk for a half an hour. We'd come back. We'd sit down for 2 minutes. Well, let's go for a walk. We'd go for a walk again and come back in 5 minutes. Let's go for a walk. In other words, her mind was just for the moment. And after a while, And another reason that caregivers feel this guilt is not only because things aren't getting any better, but we think we are the only people ever that have become frustrated and maybe lost our temper. I have a mentor who also took care of his wife, and I called him up once. I said, do you ever feel just like screaming? He says, feel like it. I actually do. And so, again, I have to go to the point of stressing the importance of joining the world of the person who is ill. Now, in my instance, my health was going downhill seriously, and we were spending hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to figure out what was wrong. And it was a product of isolation. It was a problem of depression and of grieving along with physical ailments. But I finally, my children, I have four children, they finally had like an intervention. And they sat me down and they say, Dad, if you don't take care of yourself, you're going to be dead before Mom. And so to any caregiver and to anyone who knows a caregiver, you have to have them understand they cannot do it alone. They cannot do it alone because it is without question one of the most challenging responsibilities that any person could ever have. And if not handled right, could be the death of someone prematurely. And then, see, what happens is caregivers think they've got to do everything. They've got to take care of their loved one. But the fact of the matter is some caregivers forget the fact that they're also a parent. They also forget that maybe they're a grandparent. They also forget that maybe they're a friend of other people who also need them. And so, yes, I devote my life and attention to Elaine, but the important part is to remember that I also have responsibilities to those also who I should be helping along the way.
So you've mentioned having a mentor yourself, having your children around you. Who else has helped you through this journey, given you advice, given you wisdom, given you comfort, or given you the medical training that you need to be able to do this?
Well, it's interesting to me that when Elaine was diagnosed with this, and also when she was determined to be eligible for nursing home care. At the time of the diagnosis or eligibility for nursing home care, no one, and it's my fault as much, but no one sat me down and said, look at Marty, this is what you're in for. And so what we need to do is to have a better understanding, really in our churches and in our communities, a better understanding of what a diagnosis of dementia, of a diagnosis of Alzheimer's means to the caregiver. And if I would have known some things earlier, there were things that I learned too late. I didn't understand that if Alzheimer's is bad, ignorance of the disease is worse. I didn't understand that it was possible and important to try and find moments of joy, to try and find out how to dance in the rain, even though this disease is as it is. So the help I got was through counseling. The help I got was through my brother. The help I got was through some very close friends. But caregivers sort of retract, and they want to go into hiding. And I've been very active in my political career. as I'm going through this, if the President of the United States of America would have invited me to come to the White House and talk, or even if the President would have said, I'm coming by your house, I would have said, no, thank you. I don't want anything to do with this. My world was getting small as Elaine's world was getting small. And so if there is one message that any listener could get out of this discussion of this hour with you, if there's any thought, it's to make sure that caregivers realize they can't do it alone, to make sure they understand that if they don't take care of themselves, they could be dead before their loved one, and what good does that do anybody?
How can a pastor or a chaplain support you through this journey of being a caregiver?
Number one, by acknowledging, and then also by working with people within the congregation to create a dementia-friendly place of worship. And just, again, I get to the acknowledgement part, but it could be that going to picking up drugs and medicines, by a friend picking up drugs and medicines, maybe cutting the grass, or maybe even taking the person who is ill for a walk or for a ride, to give the caregiver some type of respite, so that there can be a step back and then a gaining of perspective. But it would be so important for pastors and chaplains to understand, one, the acknowledgement, but then to try and have other members of the congregation understand how important the congregational members can be in improving the lives of the people who are trying to deal with this disease through volunteering and one thing about caregivers, if you come up to me and say, I'll help you, and I say, okay, well, I'll never call you because I think I can do it myself. But if you call me and say, hey, Marty, do you think I can take your library books back? Or do you think I can do this? I can. So to try and identify specific areas of activity that you can help the caregiver with so they can more willingly accept it rather than the broad general, I'll help you sometime.
So specific helps specific ways. I can't say that word today. Specific ways that that the community around you can help the caregiver, not just saying, "Oh, hey, I'll help you," and then expect them to call and they just don't. It's an overwhelming world to be in when you're caring for somebody like this. How has your faith, how has your church community, your community of faith, how have they helped you through this process over the years?
Well, first of all, as far as my faith is concerned, to have an understanding of how wonderful and how blessed our life has been when Elaine was healthy, and I think for that to be a constant reminder to me of just how really God's grace has come through. And then to also understand that in this journey, I am able to learn and grow and teach and share with others who are on the same journey so that we become companions on this journey and helping out each other. And so you take a look at this disease, you say that it's something horrible, but the blessed experience we've had in the past, the fact that I can still bring a smile to Elaine's face, the fact that we can be holding hands and she can feel the warmth and the friendliness, the fact that we can sit and watch the blowing of the wind through the trees and have as much enjoyment looking at that as if we would be looking at the Swiss Alps, to understand, and again, through prayer, but also, you know, we should be positive as individuals and not down in the dumps. And so rather than worrying about the storm to pass, to try and look for the blessedness of it all, to try and learn how to dance in the rain.
How important was it to you that Elaine be in a community like Lutheran Home? Why did you choose Lutheran Home for Elaine?
Well, we had a long history there. My My dad was there. My mom was there. Elaine's mom was there. Elaine's aunt was there. But when I leave there at night after visiting Elaine, I tell the staff that's available, I said, with Elaine's situation, the only thing I can offer her is security and comfort and love. And I said, I want to thank you for giving her that and for having me feel assured that when I leave, of the only things that I can give her, you're giving her that. And so there are many fine memory care facilities for individuals in and around our different communities. I just was fortunate enough to have had personal experience with the Lutheran home so that I could feel very assured that that was an important and a good place for Elaine to be.
Your story, My Two Elaines, by Martin Schreiber. How can we find your book?
First of all, we have a website, mytwoelanes.com, and that could give some interesting background and so forth. But then also order it through mytwoelanes.com. Amazon has it. Most Barnes and Nobles have it. And I would if anybody would take a look at that book and they feel that that would help them, and they would want to write a review that they would recommend it so that others would be helped, that would be a wonderful thing. Again, if Alzheimer's is bad, ignorance of the disease is worse. Rather than worrying about the storm to pass, to try and learn how to dance in the rain.
Martin Schreiber, thanks so much for being our guest today on the Coffee Hour.
Thank you.
I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO, the listener-supported broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. To support the Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit kfuo.org or text KFUO to 41444. KFUO, Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.